Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning, everybody. Cold Saturday morning in the Delaware Valley, along with my pal Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack now, taking you up to 1 o'clock today. So much to talk about. Eagles season unfortunately ended last weekend, but we have a lot of postmortem and a lot of looking ahead. We have a couple of very good, fun, special guests joining us today. We have a good theme for our Scheib Sports this week in Philadelphia sports history. A lot going on what we're watching. But Ray Dinger, I believe we are compelled today to open with the Sixers.
Oh, okay.
By the way, how was your walk over this morning?
Brisk.
Oh yeah,
I did it in record time. I think I wanted to. From the time I left my front door to I got to the front door here, I was moving pretty quickly.
That's good. A little cardio for you.
Yeah, it's okay. but it's cold out. Not windy, thank goodness. But it's if you haven't gone out to get the paper yet, or if you haven't gone out to make that coffee run this morning, dress warmly. It's cold.
All right. And by the way, I left out. At some point in this hour, we got to just flay the Flyers. Ooh, that was onomatopoeic, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay, but I want to open with the Sixers, then we'll get to the Eagles, because the Sixers lose last night. They have a 24-point lead at home against a sub-500 LA Clippers, who are missing some of their better players. They have the Sixers have an 11-point lead going into the fourth, and they blow it. Offense goes cold, defense goes soft, terrible loss, reminiscent of some of last year's playoff losses. And by the way, Ray, Joel Embiid with 40 points to go along with 13 rebounds. 90 points in his last two games, they split.
Yeah, just another night at the office.
Unbelievable. Last night after the game, Doc Rivers is asked, hey, well, you know what? I think the question is on this cut. So we'll play the question from a young reporter there and then Doc Rivers' answer. Here you go.
What part of this loss would you attribute to coaching?
I don't know. Would you ask Pop that question? No, you wouldn't. So don't ask me that question. I've earned that.
Ray, did I hear that correctly from Doc Rivers? Don't ask me that question. I've earned that, comparing himself to Greg Popovich. By the way, Ray, Greg Popovich, 5 NBA titles, 3-time coach of the year, won a gold, Olympic gold medal. Doc, 12 years ago in Boston, got a ring.
Right.
Okay. Your response.
Uncalled for. Beneath him. It's a valid question to ask, you know. And I don't think when he frames it in the context of Greg Popovich, it's not that he's saying that he has comparable accomplishment or he has as many rings. I don't think that's it. I think what he's saying to the reporter is, you wouldn't ask Greg Popovich that question because you know he'd bite your head off. You're asking me that question because you think I'm a nice guy who's just going to do what you want me to do, which is roll over.
Oh, okay. I definitely take it differently. I think he asked, like, you know, my credentials are such that you don't second guess what I do.
I think it's you know, you wouldn't have the guts to ask Greg Popovich that because you know what he would say to you. So don't try to take advantage of me because you think I'm a nice guy. Okay. That's how I take it.
So I see it. You see it that, hey, I'm a tough guy. Don't even try it. And I see it that, hey, I'm above reproach. Don't try it. Either way, I don't think it's good. It doesn't work either way to me.
No. Me either. I mean, I'm not trying to absolve him or defend him or anything. It's just, you know, it's uncalled for. It's a reporter doing his job, and you're taking issue with the fact that he's doing his job. And that's, you know, to me, that's, if you're a coach, somebody asks you a question like that, you have two choices as the coach. You can fall on the sword and say, yeah, you know what, this probably is on the coach. You know, you blow a 24-point lead late in the game. It's fair to criticize the coaching. You could do that and try and absolve your players a little bit. Or you could say, all right, you know, let's talk about that. You know, what would you have rather had me do differently? What would I have done differently? And have the conversation, you know, just say, basically say, I don't agree with you, but yeah. Okay, let's talk about it.
Yeah, give me a specific. Yeah, the specific I would give is like, they seem, anytime the other team goes into a zone defense, the Sixers seem completely lost, which to me partly falls on a coach.
Right. So, I mean, okay, let's have that discussion. You know, you're either going to go along with it and take the fall because you're going to protect your players, which a lot of coaches would choose to do, or if you really disagree with it, all right, you tell me, where do you think the coaching fell short? And we'll talk about it. And what are your points? And I'll try and answer them. But to do this, which is just basically get out of my face, is, to me, unprofessional.
Yeah, see, and I think he's being condescending because it reminds me last year of the playoffs when they were blowing those leads to Atlanta. First of all, he's got a history of blowing leads. This team has a recent history of blowing big leads. So any question revolving around why do you keep blowing big leads to me is fair. If it's the coaching part of it, it's a fair question. But he played this act last year during the series against Atlanta when he was asked, like, you know, do you think maybe in a close game you might want to take Ben Simmons out at the end because they're just playing, you know, hack-a-shack with Ben or hack-a-Ben or whatever you want to call it. They're just fouling Ben. And he just, if you remember, he gave the, you don't know basketball, I know basketball.
Yeah.
He gave that. And I feel he's doing that. I think he's very thin-skinned. And I think they're blowing a lot of leads, and it's very frustrating. We'll get into that more. Derek Bodner, who's one of the sharpest basketball minds around this town, is going to join us at 11, and we'll deep dive into that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I need the astute brain of Ray Dinger, football man.
Oh, okay.
Ray, between you and I, can you explain to me that how and why Jonathan Gannon is apparently the hottest candidate for head coach out there? Denver's interested. Jacksonville. Everybody's looking at him. Hotter than Brian Flores, who got fired after a good job at Miami. Hotter than Doug Peterson, who won a Super Bowl. We lived with Jonathan Gannon for a year. I mean, I get he worked within limitations. I understand sometimes what he was trying to do. I think the defense improved. But how in the world is he now hot head coach material?
He's been in the conversation now for a while. I mean, he was a guy that a lot of people were talking about last offseason. Not necessarily as head coach, but everybody was saying, oh, yeah, here comes the next great young defensive coordinator. In fact, Jeff Lurie, when they hired him, Jeff Lurie made that point. That
I know.
There was so much talk about, I kept hearing about Jonathan Gannon. I feel like we're really lucky to get him. So
that's Jeff Lurie.
Mm-hmm. No, that was out there. I could tell you for a fact
it's
out there.
I know, but did you see anything this year that elevated his status that, hey, he's not just a great candidate for defense coordinator. This guy's the next Vince Lombardi.
Well, I don't think anybody's saying that.
Well, I'm stretching a point to make a point, Ray.
Yeah, well, you don't have
every
to stretch
team that's got
point.
A coaching opening, it's like, yeah, they're going to fly in. There's a Denver's, right, is flying in to mm-hmm. interview Jonathan Gannon
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing? I watched the Eagles this year. You watched them this year.
Right.
Did you think he did again, I'm not saying he did a terrible job, okay? They won 9 games, and he was part of that.
Right.
But did you see anything this year that you would say, oh, this guy's got to be hired as a head coach?
No. But but there is the fact that his numbers aren't bad. You know, and I think that's what the people are looking at. I mean, they were a top 10 defense. And people are, you know, seriously.
I heard a really smart guy who said it depends what numbers you look at.
Well, that's how I feel. But that was the smart guy
I was referring to.
Oh, okay.
I heard you earlier this week on the same issue say, hey, look at what happened in the red zone. That's a big stat.
And so when
I was referring to a really smart guy, right?
Oh, see, I missed that
now
entirely.
You're arguing with yourself.
I've never been referred to as a really smart guy, so you caught me unawares there. But that's your point. I mean, his raw numbers. If you just look at overall defense, their ranking, they're not bad. They were top 10, and people will look at that. They'll look at the improvement that the team made this year from 4 wins to 9 wins. The fact that they did finish in the top 10 overall defense. The fact that you look at the personnel. And you say, he didn't have a whole heck of a lot to work with there, and they were top 10 defense. I mean, all of that stuff is out there, and all of that stuff generates some conversation. Plus, the fact he's a young guy who has a good, you know, who has good word of mouth around the league.
Yeah,
and so everybody wants to explore it and kind of just sit down with him and pick his brain. Now, I would say on the other side, those of us that watched this team all year, we have seen the shortcomings here. And those are in the statistics too. If you care to go there, I mean, you just kind of alluded to them, but I mentioned it when I was with Angelo this week. They were 23rd in the league on third down. They're 29th in the league in the red zone. They had 16 takeaways in a 17-game season. They had 29 sacks, and only one team in the league had fewer, and that was Atlanta. And of those 29 sacks, six of them came in the game against pitiful Detroit. So, I mean, those are the numbers I look at. I mean, the overall numbers, you look at them, you say, that's not bad. But I look at these numbers, and to me it sort of points to where I thought that the coaching fell short.
Okay. You know what else I look at? I look at the Tampa game, and I look at it this way. And they weren't going to win that game. We hoped they would stay close. It didn't. It falls as much on the offense as the defense, if not more. But here's kind of my thought. Tom Brady's going to probably beat you, but if you're going to try to have Tom Brady beat you, probably the best thing to do is just have that soft bend but don't break. Let's stay back in these conservative zones and just let him keep throwing underneath all day. Because the whole Jonathan Gannon theory, as I understood it this year, was let's make the other team try to have a 15-play drive down the field because sooner or later they're going to make a mistake, and that way the drive will die.
Correct.
We'll just keep giving them 7-8 yards at a pop, and eventually they'll make a mistake. I don't like that strategy against Tom Brady. That may work against Tyler Heinicke. It may work against some other guys better than Heinicke, but it's not going to work against Brady, and it was a terrible game plan that he brought into that game.
You could make that statement kind of whenever they played a really good quarterback. I mean, really good quarterbacks.
The passer rating among those guys has got to be about 110.
It's higher. And their completion percentage was around 80. And that's the problem. I mean, they had some real success against some of the lesser quarterbacks, the guys you played in the second half of the year. But you're not going to be successful playing that way against the top guys. The idea of Jonathan Gannon, I'm taking away the big play. You know, you're not going to beat me with the big play. We're not giving up the 40, 50 yard chunk. We're just not going to do that. We're going to make you move the ball down the field. Well, you get against a guy like Brady. Brady says, "Okay, I'll take that. I don't need to throw it 60 yards. You know, I'll just throw my eights, nines, and tens, and I'll just control the ball and win the game that way." If you look at the two games, I actually went back and looked this up. The two games that Brady played, and okay, people are going to say, "Well, it's Tom Brady for God's sake. He's the greatest quarterback of all time." But okay, if you're the defensive coordinator, you still got to play against him, and you got to try and figure out some way to take something away from the guy.
Yeah.
And look at the two games that they played. I think he completed like 60 passes into two games.
Yeah, and broke a sweat.
And there were only five of them that were longer than 20 yards.
Yeah.
So he just murdered you in the intermediate area, and you just seemed incapable or unwilling to try and deal with that.
Okay. So if apparently other teams decided they didn't want to watch that game and they want to hire him to be their next head coach, if he goes, there are certainly and suddenly some very respected, experienced defensive guys available.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Flores, who for reasons unknown to most mortals got fired in Miami. Vic Fangio got let go. Don Martindale left Baltimore yesterday. Mike Zimmer, the Vikings head coach, good defensive mind. All presumably available if the Jonathan Gannon leaves. Mm-hmm. Ray, I see upgrade.
Yeah. I mean, you could look at it that way. You sure could. I think Flores is probably not in the discussion. He's aiming higher. He wants to be a head coach.
Well, I hope he gets it, but we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, no, I think he will.
This league is okay.
I think he will. I would be surprised if, with all the openings you have here, that Flores doesn't get one of them. But the other three guys are all older guys, veteran guys, who at this point, I don't see them as head coaching candidates. Vic had his shot in Denver. Didn't work out. So they're back in play, but they're back in play as DCs. They're out there for the defensive coordinator spot. And I think I like all of them. I really do like. Vic Fangio goes all the way back to the Stars, for heaven's sakes. The guy of that group I like. I really like Martindale. I think Martindale's done a very good job in Baltimore. I'm really surprised. I was very surprised that he was let go in Baltimore. I don't think he's going to be on the street very long. Mm-hmm. If by some circumstance here, Jonathan Gannon does get plucked by one of these teams to be the next head coach, then my first phone call is to Don Martindale.
Yeah.
If you're talking about a defensive coordinator that will get after the quarterback, a guy that's going to give you a lot of different looks and do a lot of different things, and not be quite as, for the lack of a better term, predictable. Martindale's your guy. I think he would. He's the kind of guy that would play the kind of defense. Let's put it this way: he's the kind of guy that would play a style of defense that Seth Joyner would like.
Ooh, linebackers coach. Mm. Well, listen. We'll see how that plays out. The Eagles fans watched the Ravens for a lot of years, and their defense was terrific for a lot of years. Let me get in a quick call here, and then we'll tell you what we have coming up in the rest of the show. Our friend Jack the Dude from Santa Barbara.
Good morning.
First of the day. Early out there, man.
Yeah, well, it's what we call cold here, but not what you guys call cold.
Mm-mm.
So, but I'm usually up early anyway. Hey, it's great to touch base with you guys. Thank you for taking the call, as always. I'm going to take my shot at talking about the Sixers, which we don't often do, but here's what I see happening. Joel Embiid, he went jelly leg last night, and that's what's going to happen to him when they have him trying to be Giannis or Jokic. He's neither, and they just have him doing too much and everybody else is standing around and they can't stop anyone. They don't have any consistent defense. So that was a sad loss last night.
Ray, we have seen Joel Embiid in previous years either run out of gas or get hurt toward the playoffs. I know neither of us is a big fan of what do they call the scheduled nights off? I forget what the nonsense is.
Load management.
Oh, load management. That's it, Ray. What are you as well? And I think Jack's got a point, though. Are you worried about Embiid kind of, playing all these minutes in January and not going to be there in April?
Thoughts cross my mind. Although I will say it appears to me, I may be wrong about this, but it appears to me he's in better shape than he was in the past. I mean, he's holding the minutes better now than he has in past years. He looks at the end of the game in the fourth quarter, he's not quite as gassed as he was before. But I think if you keep asking him to play this kind of schedule for the rest of the year, yeah, he may be out of gas by the end.
Here's my point, Ray. When he seems to, when he gets mentally and physically tired, he brings the ball down almost to his ankles, and he did it twice in a row. And that's how they lost the game. He was at the top of the key. He brings the ball down like he's a 5'6" Muggsy Bogues point guard. And they know this. They set him up. And he makes mental mistakes right there. And then he looks at the ref like, where's my foul, right? And that's the flaw in his game that I see when he gets tired. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you make a good point, and it's worrisome. We're going to talk later in the show. Derek Bodner is going to join us, and we're going to talk kind of where they are headed this year. They're kind of stuck in limbo with, Ben Simmons not playing, so you don't get him, nor do you get anything for him. So that's the problem. Hey, Ray, I need a favor.
What's that?
Coming up in the next segment, Ray, we need to do this. I want to do this early. I need you to skin skewer the Flyers, Ray. I need you to dissect that carcass of a franchise. I need you to defenestrate the orange and black, Ray.
Hmm.
Let's get it done. Let's get it done early. Let's give them exactly what they deserve.
Well, I mean, you and I are of similar minds on this.
I know that.
You're certainly going to chime in, I would hope.
I'm going to play percussion and let you play lead. But okay. I will definitely play a loud percussion, I promise.
Okay.
All right. Also, coming up today, I think a fun what we're watching, a new and pretty good coming-of-age movie that I watched on TV this week, a great Eagles memory on our Scheib Sports This Week in Philadelphia Sports History. We'll talk Sixers, as I said, with Derek Bodner. Ray, we're going to visit with Baldy, our insider Brian Baldinger.
I always enjoy that.
Always. Smart guy. Insider Calls presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help you make better bets through real proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. 215-592-9494. 215-592-9494. Oh, by the way, we're getting back to what we're watching this week. Not what we're watching. Excuse me. We always do that. We're getting back to Tell Us Your Story this week. But we're going to do it tomorrow, and Ray, fun guest tomorrow, good back in the day guest.
Oh yeah, and a guy with a long Philadelphia history and still a legend. Well, a legend all over the place, but particularly in his old hometown, Philadelphia. Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Remember the time we went to Sonny Hill's birthday party, and I didn't know. There's a guy sitting there, and I just start talking to him, and it's like, oh, obviously you played basketball in the day. He's like, yeah, I played a little bit. And it's like, hi, I'm Glenn Mack now. He goes like, hi, I'm Earl Monroe. It's like,
right. Yeah. I was a little surprised you didn't know. I mean, as soon as I walked in and saw him, I knew who it was.
He's in street clothes, an older guy. I don't know. What can I tell you? He wasn't wearing a Knicks jersey. Anyway.
Well, I knew him right away because I saw him plenty.
Yeah, I'm sure. I felt a little dumb. But he was a great guy, and we'll have him tomorrow. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now, Saturday morning on 94 WIP.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack, 94 WIP. Ray, this is your favorite football weekend of the year. I know that.
It is. It really is. Yeah, the four games, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. It's terrific. I mean, now you're down to the really good teams. Now you've paired the field, and now you're down to the really good teams. And I really do think this weekend you're going to have four really good games.
Well, we're going to promo the two that are being – actually, maybe we'll promo off for later today, and we have Brian Baldinger as a guest, and then tomorrow we'll review the two today and preview the two tomorrow. Ray, special guest tomorrow to tee up Bill's Kansas City.
Well, I know who that is.
My dad.
Backed by popular demand.
Yes. I told him, Dad, this time, do me a favor. Just, like, make sure you're either your girlfriend's in the apartment with you or somewhere else, because we can't have her knocking on the door. Anyway, it was all very
Oh, that was part of the charm, don't you think?
It was. And my dad loved it, so we'll do it again. And it worked.
Well, and he loved the game.
Oh, gosh, we watched that thing together. It was unbelievable, so we'll see.
Well, you know what you have to do now, and I've already told you this.
Yeah.
But you have to do everything exactly the same.
Got to get the same Chinese food.
Marvin's got to come over at exactly the same time. You got to get the Chinese from the same place.
Yeah,
you got to get the same order.
Yeah.
Sweet and sour pork,
yeah,
right?
I love that, yeah.
Little,
my wife was thinking of making a lasagna, so you're saying that's out.
No. You got to ride it, you know. You got to ride it as far as it'll take you.
Hot and sour soup.
Yeah, do everything exactly the same. Maybe even tell Marvin to wear the same sweater, wear the same shoes.
I took a picture, so I do have his outfit.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think you got to do everything exactly the way you did it last week.
Sit in the same spots.
Yep.
Okay.
All
there
of that stuff.
All right, Ray, in more serious matters, the Flyers lose again on Thursday night at home to a sub-500 opponent, Columbus. Ray, I've only been here since 1986, but I do not remember this franchise ever being this low. There was the pre-Lindros period where they missed the playoffs, but they still had kind of energy from what they had done in the 80s, and the fan base was there. I mean, I'm looking the other night, that place was half empty.
Right.
They are now the first team in NHL history. NHL started, what, 1920, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
First team in NHL history with two 10-game losing streaks in the first 40 games of the season. They're 0 for 16 on shootout attempts this year, 0 for 2 on penalty shots. When they don't score first, they're 2-17-1, which to me sounds like if they don't score first, they just kind of pack it in.
Right.
Starting to see the Flyers beat writers, and you and I have discussed this, a less critical group of reporters does not exist in this town.
Right.
Than the Flyers beat writers, for God's sakes. They're in the bag. But you're starting to see them working on stories about what the franchise needs to do moving forward. Well, let me toss to you, because I said I was going to kind of try to let you do this. Ray, you were there literally at the beginning. You went to the parade when they introduced these guys. You and, like, three people stuck in traffic watched that parade.
Mm-hmm. And went to the first practice. The first open practice at the Spectrum.
Thinking you had to beat the crowd, right?
Yeah, thinking we got to get there. Well, we got to get there 2 hours early because this place is going to be packed.
And?
And, well, we walked in. It was us and the ushers.
Okay. So your hockey bona fides are there from wherever. You were a fan of this franchise before you ever covered it. Have you ever seen them? When I say low, I don't mean just bad in terms of performance, although there's that too. But in terms of public interest, public image, attendance, they're standing among the franchises, just kind of their irrelevance.
Yeah, that's kind of what they are. I take no joy in saying it, but that is kind of what they are. They're irrelevant. I mean, nobody talks about them. Nobody cares about them. They are off the radar. They're off the grid. In a city that loves its sports, in a city that is as passionate about sports as any town in America, they have ceased to exist. And it's of their own doing. It was always that way. I mean, the Flyers were a really popular team in this town for a long time. And the fans, there are a lot of fans here that are really excited about them. And, you know, those of us that have around, we remember the runs to the Cup, and we remember the times they went to the finals and lost, but still really energized this place. That's real. We all lived that. And it's gone. It's evaporated. And it's not the fans' fault. I mean, it's what the organization has done or what the organization has not done. And that's you ask, is this the lowest point? And I think it is. You look back at some of the early years with the team. You kind of understood what they were back then. They were a new sport, new team in the city. They kind of introduced themselves. In the early years, they were really an expansion team for a number of years. As the six new teams that came in were all expansion teams, and so they were up against the six big clubs, the veteran teams, the established teams, and you didn't expect them to win those games. You just didn't. And you know they played respectably for a couple of those years, a couple of the other years not so much. But the fact is, you kind of understood why it was. You kind of understood that they were just building. I mean, they were just putting down the foundation, and you hoped at some point they were going to turn the corner and be able to play with the big guys. Well, year seven, they played them so well they won the Stanley Cup and then won it again the next year. And that really kind of established them on a solid footing. But in those years, I mean, there were ups and downs, and there were times when they, you know, you saw one of the papers this week did a chart of comparable losing streaks. And they had streaks of losing 8, 9, 10 games. I mean, that's happened back in those years. But you kind of understood it because you understood what they were. And you also understood that it was a really good league back then. There were only 12 teams. There weren't that many players. To see the Flyers now at this point in their history be this inept and to be this just directionless in an NHL that to me now is so watered down with so many bad teams and so many faceless kinds of players, for the Flyers to kind of get lost in those woods, that's the most discouraging part. When they were struggling early, you kind of understood why they were struggling early. But now, I mean, it's a watered-down league with a lot of bad teams, and you're sinking towards the bottom of that. So for that reason, and the fact that people, even the people that really love this team, have just kind of thrown up their hands and walked away, that's why I say when I look at where they are right now, I would say this is the low point, and I just don't know. What's really discouraging to me is until there are major changes, and I'm not just talking about coaches and players, but I'm talking about all the way up the ladder into the organization, until there are those kinds of major, meaningful changes, I don't see anything changing.
No, I don't either, and it really is. It's not about trading players or firing coaches. It's not about taking the C off of Claude Giroux. It's about changing the top of the organization back to something that knows and cares about the sport more than it knows and cares about a mascot, right? There's our weekly shot at Gritty.
Right.
Firing Chuck Fletcher probably makes sense. And you saw the soap opera that ensued over the last couple of weeks with Bobby Clark going full bore at Ron Hextall and what he had done. But it all starts at the top. The fans are talking with their empty seats. They're frustrated. They're angry. They're fed up. It's inept. I read a piece by our friend Anthony Sanfilippo. They had a giveaway advertised this week that people who went to the game never got the giveaway. It is a great sport being killed in Philadelphia. And we've said before, we've compared them to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, by the way, are the team that beat them. They're worse, Ray. They're the Jacksonville Jaguars of hockey. You know what they are? They're the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mm-hmm. They are a bad, irrelevant, small market. It's not a small market, but small market-minded franchise, and it is a shame for everybody. All right.
Yeah. No, I
got that out of the way.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with all of that, and it's really a shame. And I don't know. I wish I could say, you know, I can kind of see things getting better. But then you look at the game the other night, the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, seriously, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and you lose at home to them. And then I read the stories the next day, and people are saying, and you know, players and coaches are saying, well, you know, play pretty good. You know, that wasn't bad. I mean, you know, I saw some encouraging. You lost at home to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And all of a sudden, that's, well, I'm seeing some positive signs. Well, when a home loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets is an indication that you regard that as a positive sign, then I think that's an indication just how far removed from being a good team you really are.
Yeah. Brandon in Brookhaven wants to touch in on this. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Glenn. I have one little Flyers rant, and if you may, let me make a comment about Claude Giroux at the end. But first off, Glenn, you really got me going when you said Ray Dinninger got a cell phone.
It was a goof.
That was a joke.
Ray, did you know about that?
I saw it. My wife showed me, and I had two reactions. Number one, I laughed. I thought it was very funny.
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know, I don't really think anybody's going to take that seriously. But
nor
apparently,
did
a lot
I
of people
think
did.
Anybody would.
Oh, I did. I thought the world was coming to an end. I was like, oh my God, what's going on?
Yeah, not to worry.
These Flyers, let me just say this as a fan. In my household, my stepfather always told me old stories of him having the Stanley, going to see the Stanley Cup playoff, having season tickets, and how the team organization really cared about his fans and alumni. This organization is now apathetic towards everything. They don't care. And as a fan, it's hard for me to watch Flyers games. In my household, it was always Flyers, then Eagles, then Phillies. This is pathetic. I am so angry. They're going to ruin Carter Hart. Do they expect to see 40 shots per game and have a shutout? I tried to watch a Columbus game. I tried. I turned it off. I couldn't take any more of it. They just don't have any heart at all anymore. And now I'm going to actually defend Claude Giroux just a little bit here. The team doesn't build around his players anymore. They just pick up here, there.
I know. It's in many ways. I know, and I don't want to get into the debate because it's not. And Claude Giroux's not part of the problem nor part of the solution. He's a guy who had a terrific career here, and that's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah, I do agree with his point about Carter Hart, though. I mean, he had a really bad year last year, but I think he's bounced back and he's playing really good this year. But I mean, he's getting no help. This team can't score. I mean, they just can't score. And I can see what's going to happen with Hart is within a year or so that they're going to just decide, look, we got to really tear this thing down and, you know, move some people and change the face and shake things up. And there aren't going to be many guys that are going to have any value, but he will.
Yeah.
And they're just going to trade him off to somebody else, to a good team. And then I think people are going to find out how good this kid really
win
is.
A cup somewhere else. That'll be fun. Let me get Michael in Lower Gwynedd. We're certainly going to talk a lot this weekend about Jalen Hurts. And Michael, you got some worries, eh?
I do. And, you know, I want both of your perspectives, you know, Glenn from your side and then Ray from his side. And, Glenn, I got a show for you, too. Is the young quarterback coming in, when Jalen faces a good defensive coordinator like Todd Bowles or like Quinn early in the first Dallas game, is he just too scripted? Is the young quarterback coming in too scripted? I almost think of like an actor who can't improv. When he missed the Goddard touchdown a couple weeks ago, and then last week I'm just yelling at the TV because he can't find Smith, and I see him wide open. I guess I would like Glenn's perspective from, you know, my point of view, and then Ray from studying all the players he does in the draft. Have they corrupted the young quarterback?
I don't know if they corrupted. I think he's certainly got flaws, and the biggest thing is not seeing guys when they're open, not getting the ball out quick enough, and I don't know that he's ever going to be a great quarterback, and I don't really know if he's your quarterback of the future as in your next 5 to 10 years. But I think he's the best option you have for now. I don't want to spend all that on Russell Wilson for what Russell Wilson used to be.
No.
I don't know. I don't know enough about the kids going out in the first round, but it doesn't sound like any of those is the franchise guy. So to me, given what you got, I'll have him another year and see if you can make him better. Ray?
Yeah, that's where I am. I mean, I saw a lot of improvement in him this year. I really did. And I want to see, give him another year next year and see if he continues to grow. I don't know that he's ever going to be a superstar. I mean, I don't know that he's ever going to be what Russell Wilson was at his peak. I kind of think not. But I think that he can be a guy that wins for you. I mean, you saw that this year. And my thought would be, in a year like this, when you have as many draft picks as you have, and you have, to me, just a golden opportunity to really rebuild this team in so many areas, do that. You know, go out and bring in the pieces and the young players and the kinds of physical players that this defense needs. They're there this year, and you get the picks to go get them. Rebuild that defense and put a better team around Jalen Hurts. Give them one more year and then see what you got. I think that, Glenn, you kind of said it. I mean, the two things are his ability to – the things he really needs to improve on are getting rid of the ball quicker, seeing the field better, processing the information quicker, and accuracy. You know, that's pretty sweeping. I mean, that's a lot of – those are kind of your – I've just named all kind of the quarterback fundamentals. But those are the areas where he has to improve. But they're coachable. They're improvable. And I think with one more year, I want to give him that opportunity.
I agree.
What else?
Right.
You said you have a show to watch?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So on Peacock, it's a docuseries. I didn't know this story, and I assume you two do. but it's called Olympic Meddling, and it's about the figure skate competition years ago, and it was a Russian figure skating group that won gold, and they thought Canadians should have, and the mob gets involved. Four-part docuseries. I thought it was really good.
It's on Peacock. What's the name?
Olympic Meddling.
I like it. I appreciate it. Always looking for a good show. Going to recommend a movie tonight that I saw. Hey, before we hit this break, I want to plug one thing. We have a big charity event coming up, and Ray is very much involved, which I appreciate. This coming Thursday, January 27th, 6 to 9 p.m., is going to be at the Puddler's Kitchen by Conshohocken Brewing. That's 3 DeKalb Street in Bridgeport, right over the bridge from Norristown. I have a longtime friend who was paralyzed in a cycling biking accident. He's quadriplegic. The cost of medical care and adapting his house runs in the hundreds of thousands, to be honest with you, in future care. So we're holding an event to help raise money. $15 entry fee, all at the door. Not tickets in advance. Just come show up. You get a free buffet. First 40 people get a copy of the book I wrote with Big Daddy, Great Book of Philadelphia Sports Lists. And, boy, we have some terrific things going on. First of all, Ray, you are going to be there signing and selling your book, Finished Business.
Right, and donating part of the proceeds to the cause.
Very much appreciated. Mike Sielski, who's got that new book about Kobe Bryant, is going to be doing the same thing. We have some great auction items, tickets to watch Flyers game with Bernie Parent in the presidential box. Bernie will be there at this event on Thursday, by the way, being charming as always. I got today from the Eagles and Dave Spadaro a Lane Johnson autographed jersey, Brandon Graham autographed football. Merrill Reese will do your phone message. Joe Conklin will do your phone message, I guess, as Merrill Reese, if that's what you want. And, Ray, you and your wife donated something yesterday, which is just great that I'm eager to put in the auction.
Yeah, it's a great gift. It's a bottle of Vermeil wine. And anybody that knows, you know, Dick Vermeil's history in wine now, I mean, he has a winery out in Calistoga, California, where he's from, that is very good. And I'm not a drinker, but my wife drinks wine and knows wine, and she raves about the wine. And it's been written up in every wine magazine and gourmet and all that stuff. I mean, it's really one of the highly regarded wineries out in the Napa Valley. And I got a bottle of wine from Dick, and is autographed by Dick, by Harold Carmichael, and by Ron Jaworski.
Yeah, I'm not opening that bottle of wine, as delicious as it may be. And it's in this beautiful wood-carrying case with an opener and a funnel and all kinds of great items with it. But to me, that's a display item. That with those autographs, that stays there. And I thank you guys for donating that. We have other raffle items from a lot of sports stuff, restaurant gift certificates, a lot of fun things. And the beer. Conshohocken Brewing Company is donating beer profits that night to help out the cause, our friend Ben Yellen. Again, Thursday night, 6 to 9, Puddler's Kitchen by Conshohocken Brewing Company in Bridgeport. Ray will be there. Bernie will be there. Mike Sielski will be there. Maybe some others. And it's a lot of fun. Just $15 to get in. Hope to see everybody there. 215-592-9494 coming up a little bit early today. We're going to give you what we're watching, and we'll take your calls. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That's one of my favorite albums of all time. That is great. Meatloaf.
Mm-hmm.
Bat Out of Hell is the album. Paradise by the Dashboard Light is the song people remember for the Phil Rizzuto part. It's like 8 minutes long. It's a great song. And R.I.P. to Meatloaf. A great singer, creative artist, terrific guy. I know we've talked about, I told you the story back in the day, his touring band had a softball team. And when I used to write for the Detroit Free Press, we played them in a game. And, yeah, I hit a home run off of Mr. Loaf. And after the game, he bought the beer for everybody on both teams. And he was just a great guy and a good actor, too, right? Been in some movies and did a good job.
Yes, he has. Rocky Horror, who hasn't seen that? And, of course, Fight Club. Those are the two big ones. But he's done a lot of other films. And I liked his music a lot, too. My favorite song by him is Two Out of Three Ain't Bad. That's the one that that I've played a lot, mm-hmm. and I really like that a lot. I interviewed him once. He was I was working this when I was at NFL Films, and we were doing a show about, it was one of the anniversaries of Super Bowl III, the famous Jets upset of the Colts, and so we were just grabbing. We obviously want to interview the players and the coaches from those teams, but we also want to just grab random celebrities and ask them if they remember anything about that game, just kind of get their comments on it. So the Major League All-Star Game was coming to Philadelphia at that time, and part of the week's festivities was they had a celebrity softball game down at the Vet. So you had a whole bunch of different people, actors, performers, writers, and stuff came in to play in this celebrity softball game. And so I got a crew from NFL Films. We went down there and just sort of hung around and just grabbed, just collared people and just asked them, you know, Super Bowl III, what do you remember, if anything? And Meatloaf was, in fact, he was pitching in that game, too. Seems like he really enjoyed pitching softball.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was great.
Meatloaf served up meatballs.
And he was doing it this day, too. But, I mean, I didn't know much about his background. I didn't know if he was a sports fan at all. Turns out that he was a huge sports fan. And just went on and on about how he was Johnny Unitas was his hero. And he had, like, picture of Johnny Unitas up in his bedroom, and he loved Johnny Unitas. So he said, you know, everybody else was rooting for Broadway Joe, and everybody else was rooting for the Jets and the upset, but not me. I was rooting for the Colts, and I was rooting for my man Johnny U. Could not have been nicer.
Yeah.
Could not have been nicer.
R.I.P. to a great artist, and as you and I are encounters with him, just a genuinely good guy. By the way, what we're watching is sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Take advantage of Guided Door and Window's big winter sale through January. Receive 40% off all windows and doors. Call 1-877-GO-GUIDE or visit goguida.com. All right, I'm going to give a review, Ray, to a there's a movie currently, and it's in the theaters, and it is on Amazon Prime. And you and I both read the book it's based on.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Tender Bar. Getting mixed reviews. George Clooney directed, stars Ben Affleck. Based on a memoir by the author T.J. Moringer about his youth, he went on to become a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist.
Right, J.R.
Yeah, J.R.
Right.
We had. What did I say?
You said T.J.
Oh, I don't know where that came from. You know how we have Meryl Reese on occasionally to tell us what books to read? This mm-hmm. one, The Tender Bar, is one that Meryl loved, and then I loved, and I guess you did as well. I just don't know why it took him 15 years to make the movie.
Yeah, you know, I really related to it because it's a story about a kid growing up in a bar, which I kind of did.
Yeah, sure.
Which I kind of did. I mean, a kid that grew up in a bar and became a writer. I mean, that's what the book's about. And I saw myself in that story.
Sure. Well, here's the setup. It's, as you said, it centers on a boy growing up. You see him in the movie from about age 9, a working class part of Long Island, Manhasset. His father, unlike yours, his father is a famous DJ known as The Voice. And he's walked out on the family. So the boy's being raised in a big house by his mother, by a bunch of siblings and cousins, by his grandparents. Oh, by the way, Christopher Lloyd plays the cranky grandfather in a role where he mostly curses and breaks wind.
Well cast.
Yeah, he does it well. and by the world's wisest bartender, his Uncle Charlie, Ben Affleck, is kind of like his character in Good Will Hunting, if he ever grew up. He's somebody who listens. He gives great advice. He answers the hard questions. And Uncle Charlie runs a bar, Neighborhood Tappy. It's known as Dickens. It's the bar is filled with these classic books and blue-collar advice. So the kid who doesn't have a father is essentially adopted by all the people in the bar, and they tell him about girls and about being true to your dream, and they encourage him to read and to write and to fulfill his mother's goal that he go to Yale or Harvard, which he does. And that's the movie. It's a bit of it's a bit of messy. The plot kind of gets a little messy going back and forth from childhood to college years. You know, Ray, the book was better, of course, because the book is 350 pages or so of rich detail. Movies boil it down to 90 minutes, and so the book is always better. But Affleck is likable and laid back, and he's full of this wisdom and charm. The kid's good. There's not a lot of action. There's nothing outstanding, but it's I found it a fun way to kill an evening.
Oh, so, good.
I recommend Tender Bar. It's in theater, as I said, or it's on Amazon Prime, which, you know, I enjoy. So this was a decent coming-of-age movie. I'll give it a B. You remember a couple weeks back I told you about the movie Coda, C-O-D-A, which is about a girl who grows up as the only hearing person in a deaf family and wants to become a singer.
Yeah, that sounded good.
That's an A. I mean, that's the best movie I saw in the last, whatever, 6-9 months. But those two got me thinking about coming-of-age movies. So here's the deal. We have our weekly Scheib giveaway, $50 gift card to Scheib Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Check out their throwback gear at their Center City location or scheibsports.com. Ray, let's give it today. People have to call up with whatever you call up about. Whoever gives us the best coming-of-age movie. All right?
Okay.
So I'll let you go first and take one off the board.
Okay. First one that comes to my mind is Almost Famous.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, you're a music guy.
Yeah, and it was a movie that really spoke to me. It was I'm not the world's biggest Cameron Crowe fan. I've seen most of his work, and frankly, some of it's left me a little cold. I'm still trying to figure out what Vanilla Sky was all about. But I thought he really hit it out of the park with Almost Famous, and it's really autobiographical. It's a story about him. Cameron Crowe was sort of this child prodigy, had jumped grades in through grammar school, and was just a gifted writer from the time he was like a little kid. And at the age of, and he loved rock music and he loved writing. And when he was 13, 14 years old, he began submitting articles to Rolling Stone. And one of the editors there, a guy named Ben Fong Torres, took a liking to him. And actually said, okay, why don't you write a story about this band? And it turned out to be the Allman Brothers. And it goes from just being a little story in the back of the magazine to a cover story. And so that sort of launched his career, and he got the idea to make that into a movie. So he does, and it's really good. I mean, I think it was Kate Hudson's sort of breakout role. I don't know if she's ever done anything as good since then. But it had a really good cast. Billy Crudup played one of the rock musicians.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand played his mother. Anna Paquin played one of the groupies. Kate Hudson was the groupie named Penny Lane. And he's this 15-year-old kid just traveling with a rock band.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to gather the material to write a cover story for Rolling Stone. Really, really good. And I think anybody would like it. I mean, for me, especially for being somebody who's a writer, I thought there was a lot of that in there that sort of reminded me of me, frankly. But I think it's the kind of movie anybody could see and enjoy.
Well, that's a really good one. I don't want to give too many away, but you know what? Dan Wilson, our producer, I'll let Dan throw one, and then we'll just leave the rest for the audience.
Yeah, I almost feel like you feel bad taking another haymaker off the board.
You want to leave it off? Because you think it's a winner, you want to just leave it for now?
I mean, I can still give it. I feel like there's enough.
All right, go ahead.
I was going to say Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I think it's just an awesome comedy movie. This guy, you know, is hacking into his school computer system to find different ways to, you know, ditch school and fudge the attendance numbers and he does everything possible. He goes to a Cubs game. He's leading the parade. He ropes his girlfriend and his best friend into it and to all of the shenanigans. They go to that restaurant. Yeah, I think it's just a phenomenal movie, and it's, you know, his last big hurrah before he goes off to college.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I like it. I like them both. Nice. And so call about whatever topic you want, but whoever gives us the best coming-of-age movie wins a $50 gift card to Scheib Sports today. That'll be fun. All right, Roger, Southwest Philly, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, how you doing today, fellas?
All right.
Great listen. You're a great listen as usual.
Thanks, Roger.
So I want to bring up something that doesn't seem to get talked about. It's kind of the 10,000-pound elephant in the room. And let me just – I want to preface everything by saying – I've been watching basketball since the 1970s, so it gives you an idea how old I am. At a time in which it was essential, you know, 70s, 80s, and 90s. You needed a dominant big man to win the title. With these, you know, I know there were some outliers. Golden State did it one year with Clifford Ray, and then you had Detroit and Chicago.
Right.
The thing that the thing is this: through no fault of his own, and Embiid is great, and so is Jokic in Denver. I just don't think the way the league plays today that it's not essential anymore. Back then, the league played inside out.
Yeah.
Now the league plays outside in. And I'm going to ask you guys a question. Name me the last time a team won a title where the best player was the center. You got to go back to Shaq, and I'm not talking about Shaq in Miami, because by that time, Dwayne Wade was the better.
It's a small man's game. I got to run, and I'm sorry to do this to you. I got to run. It is a small man's game now. You know what? You know who we can ask that question to, Ray?
Derek Bodner.
Who's coming up next, right here on 94 WIP.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.